Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes, is presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products on 1010XL. Now your hosts, Lauren Brooks, Donna Murphy, and Blythe Brumleave.
Good evening, ladies.
Hello.
Welcome to another Tuesday night.
Last second mic check.
Right? There you go. Look alive. That's what I always say to myself when I like forget that I have an update coming up. I'll be like, all right, Lauren, look alive. Here we go. We will talk Jaguars tonight as the Jaguars are playing important December football. Mm-hmm. Head coach Doug Marone talked about that yesterday. And really, does it still seem surreal there, Blythe? Because you just made a face like, holy cow.
It's sort of a pinch myself moment, just considering everything that this fan base has been through over the past decade, the August that we experienced earlier in the year. It's all sort of, I'm finally allowing myself to have that playoff hope. And I think earlier in the season, it was a little bit of a struggle for me because you're just waiting for the bottom to fall out of everything and just as the organization to go back to what it typically has done. But I think you got to give credit where credit is due. Dave Caldwell, Tom Coughlin, Doug Marone, that trio has really set the tone for this organization now and moving forward.
I thought it was so much fun on Sunday to drive away from the game and go, the Jaguars are definitively a lot better than the Indianapolis Colts. It hasn't been like that for a very long time.
So strange.
But it's so fun to be able to say the Jaguars should have won, and they did win. They took care of business.
It's exciting.
It's what your team does every freaking Sunday there, D-Mark.
It's exciting to say that the Seahawks and the Jags have flexed out the Cowboys and Giants.
It's kind of crazy.
It's fantastic. It is so fantastic. And I know Coughlin says he doesn't pay attention to the Giants, but come on. That has to be so bittersweet. Like, bye, little team. Bye, little peons.
It's almost like when you miss work and nobody misses you. That's the worst feeling. You kind of want chaos to happen just so you know your value of what you bring to the workplace. Any kind of workplace.
It's very A Few Good Men. You need me on that wall. You want me on that wall. You know, yeah. So
I love missing work and no one needs me because then I don't have to come back to like a firestorm or a bunch of emails. You know, I love when it's just like a calm, peaceful day. Then again, here at the radio station, there's no like real stressful days.
No.
That's the beauty of it. All right. So the Jaguars swept the Colts. Mm-hmm. The Colts aren't very good, ladies. They are 3-9.
Newsflash.
Yeah.
Terrible.
They're not good. And I think even with Andrew Luck, we wouldn't have been looking at a team that was above 500. Yes, he swings a lot of positive momentum, but I don't think he's all that healthy. And so therefore, the Colts, again, are not very good. Mm-hmm. So did we learn anything from this Jaguars victory?
No.
I learned what an offense looks like when wide receivers catch the ball. I learned that. But outside of that, I was afraid that this game would be – that the Jaguars would get caught looking ahead with the Seattle Seahawks coming in town this week. That was my biggest fear, is that they would let the Colts sort of get – because the Colts haven't played as bad as their record sort of dictates. But I guess you are what your record says you are, as in Herm Edwards' voice. But that's – for me, with this Jaguars team, it's important for us to continue to build upon these wins and not let – it's sort of a younger team, so you can't let those distractions and you can't let the ego of a lot of the teams sort of filter in and make it seem like this is a slam dunk win. You still have to go out there and take care of business.
Paul Posluszny, I thought, played a phenomenal football game, stepped in, and it's not like you would have expected anything else because Puz has been such a leader, but he hasn't played nearly that much this season as compared with the previous 10 that he's been in the NFL. So I think I did kind of wonder, is he going to be able to step in seamlessly? Because the guys all out there that play for this defense are very fast, and Puz is a great tackler, has great form, very technical, but he's not nearly as fast and as athletic as some of the guys around
smart.
Him. But he's a very smart football player, and he showed it on Sunday. I've always loved Paul Posluszny as a football player for this team. I think he goes about his business the right way. You hear from other players that, you know, especially last year when Telvin Smith went through the death of his brother, Puz was the one that was right there with him. You always hear that he's a very put together professional football player. And I thought he showed also still the skill that he has on Sunday. I was really proud of him and happy for him.
And he talked about a little earlier or not. He talked on, I think, after the game on Sunday about how it's taken him a while to adjust to the reduced playing time and that it felt good for him to be in a rhythm on Sunday. So that was cool to hear from. And it's a good problem to have that, you know, a guy can come in that a leader like Telvin Smith can go down and then Paz can step in and really fill those shoes.
Yeah, because he would be a starter on anywhere else. Mm-hmm. He would be playing every snap on any other team.
Well, actually, you know, the one team I think he might not would be the team that's coming in. And teams that have really good middle mm-hmm. linebackers, so like Carolina with Luke Kuechly, mm-hmm. or the team that's coming in the Seahawks with Bobby Wagner, outstanding. But I think you're right. In most markets, Paul Posluszny is their defensive captain, their vocal leader, and their, you know, defensive quarterback.
Their
J.J.
Watt,
I mean, we heard him, you know, last year when John Gruden was here for the Meet Me at the 50, and all he did was rave about Puz. He even made a joke of, I would vote for you for president if you ran. That's how much he loved Puz and how he was talking about the game when he was up there trying to, you know, when he was trying to pull teeth with Blake saying, can you explain this play? And he knew nothing, but Puz was like, I have everything. I'm ready. I know what this is.
When I read in the postgame notes that the Jaguars PR sends out, Puz is one of only two guys. And I don't know who the other guy is because obviously it's a Jaguars publication, so they're not worried about the other guys in the NFL. But Puz is one of only two guys who've entered the league since 2007 who has both 15 sacks and 15 career interceptions. So we're talking about a guy that's not really on the field all that much but has done some tremendous things in his career. So the low Saturday night and the high Sunday morning, or not the high, but the temperature it'll be Sunday morning is about 34, and then it'll get all the way up to the 50s.
Get out of here.
So the good news is, Blythe, our show won't start till 11 on Sunday. It's not like we're out there at 8 a.m. when it's in the 30s.
All right.
So how will this affect your tailgating?
Well, we don't typically talk about food until it gets to be the middle of the week. And we had briefly talked about what we were going to do food-wise on Sunday because I tailgate with a large group. And so it's a little bit of a chore to get enough food for everybody. So we all sort of chip in each week. And we had an idea for wings. But now I think what we're going to do is I've mentioned walking tacos before, which is essentially you take these small bag of chips and you have a taco bar. So you have the meat, you have the, you know, lettuce, sour cream, salsa, all that good stuff. And you take a bag of chips and you crunch it up a little bit, open it up, and you put your toppings directly in the bag. We're thinking of doing that, but instead with chili and Fritos. And so I think that we're going to have a little, like, mini chili cook-off. That's what the group text was going on about today.
Seems like that would be popular.
Yeah, I think that's – I think chili's a great idea. And it's one of the only times, really, in Florida football season that it's going to be cold enough for it. How will it affect what you drink? Because that's the part I was really curious about, considering it's usually cold beverages that we're imbibing in Florida.
Well, over Thanksgiving break, we did have warm sangria and warm apple cider, so that might be an option for Sunday.
Those sound good. I always think of whiskey, even though whiskey's served over ice, and so it's still cold, but I guess I think
you do a hottie toddy.
It warms people up.
Probably with that. Hottie toddy with bourbon or whiskey. And then spiked apple cider can be with bourbon or brandy or whiskey. I'm not an alcoholic, I promise. Maybe just a little.
We're giving people some good ideas because it is not something that I think people are used to.
You can make it in a crock pot, too. That's the easiest way to do it. Just pour everything in a crock pot and just leave it on overnight, and then you can just take it with you in the morning.
And then what do you plug the crock pot into when you get to the tailgate?
It usually just stays warm enough there, but we have generators and things like that, so we're a little
They're smart.
Very smart. I know we have a vest that our GM Steve gave us, so we finally get to wear our warm fleece Jaguars vest. But I'm sure that there are a lot of people, a lot of fans who don't necessarily have like Jaguars jackets. Maybe they have them left over from like the 90s, but it's been a while since you wanted to wear.
Since it's going to
break out the starter jackets.
You know.
Yeah, and it is the teal Sunday, so I think we're going to see a lot of old school Jaguar stuff.
That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I like all.
You
got to
wear the long sleeve shirt with the sweatshirt. And then the jersey over that with the hood.
Absolutely.
Jaguars, pocket warmers,
that's
too.
How you go. Yeah.
Jaguars running back Leonard Fournette scored a touchdown against the Colts this past Sunday, and he decided to do a free throw for the celebration, and the offensive line lined up like they were boxing out after the free throw. How would you grade it on a scale of 1 to 10?
I thought it was creative. It was funny. My mom even commented. She's like, hey, I really like their celebration. I said, well, first off, I'm surprised. Will we see another celebration? Because we talked about this last week that we haven't seen one, and I didn't think it was going to be allowed in this organization. So I'm surprised. Then I wasn't surprised that Fournette did it, since he's, you know, been caught with being a little immature here and there. But it was fun. I like it.
I remember saying last week that I haven't been a huge fan of any of the celebrations, but I really liked that one. I really liked Leonard Fournette's, because there was a lot of play off of, I saw one basketball Twitter account that said nothing but Fournette. Like, there's a few different ways that they played off of it. So that was, it was creative, it was original, and then there were, it blew up on social media too. So I think that sort of plays into the factor, but that's been my favorite one so far. I wasn't a big fan of like the relay or the leapfrog. I'm like, okay, that's fine, whatever. I would probably like it more if my team did
right.
It,
the one thing I did see was that they actually are having fun. You know, I mean, you can still have fun and win and not celebrate or whatnot, but they look like cohesively as a team, that everybody likes each other, everybody gets along. It's a nice, happy locker room. It's something that we haven't seen here in a while.
Yeah, I'll give it I'll say 9 out of 10. We had Jalen Ramsey on yesterday. He gave it a 10 out of 10. But I thought my favorite part of all of this was after the game, Fournette was asked about it, and he said, oh, we have a lot of touchdown celebrations planned. We just have to get into the end zone more. So
nice.
I think that was kind of something that he had been waiting to do. Obviously hasn't been all that healthy as of late. And so when he was able to get that touchdown, it was like, all right, boys, we finally get to do this. Speaking of things that have caught on social media, Dilly Dilly. Dilly Dilly is everywhere. Even Florida State fans are now going Willie Willie for their new head coach and Willie Taggart. I heard it. I got to go to the game as a fan this past Sunday, and I heard it all over the place. I mean, as soon as someone would get a drink or the Jaguars would score, you'd hear Dilly Dilly.
That's because they're all Dan Hicken fans. That's what it is.
I think it's a right, Bud Tyler? Light fan.
Yeah, I think it's a Bud Light thing. No, it is.
I'm claiming it is Dan Hicken's Dilly Dilly. That's what we hear in the morning all the time. So I'm claiming it's a Hicken thing.
Well, they
is it genius or annoying? By the way,
it's awesome.
No, it's been cool. I do see that it could reach an oversaturation point.
I think we've
very
gotten there
quickly.
Since they've already come out with a different version of the commercial, that's what makes it fun to see.
Oh, they have. I haven't seen the second one. Okay,
yeah,
I've only seen.
I don't remember what. I don't remember the premise, but yes. So that's
I do remember seeing
fun.
That Sunday night. It was really good.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine at a wedding a few weeks back, when a couple of my really good friends got married, that was how he ended his speech, was Dilly Dilly, and everybody yelled it at the wedding.
And I think it's great when before it's, like you said, gotten to the point where it's just too much. I love when it's like still on the kind of front edge, the cutting edge. Tyler, you're in, I think, the generation where they are absolutely targeting. How do you feel about Dilly Dilly?
We're having a radio discussion about it, so it's absolutely genius. Whether
you
like it or not, we're all talking about it. It's Bud Light, so
they've
won.
Exactly. If you say Dilly Dilly, you know where that came from. That's
right.
What matters.
And I think the way I read it is Bud Light's kind of pushing back against the craft beer movement that kind of has taken over the nation, the country. And they're kind of going back at it with that, you know, oh, this is a spiced mead that I've really been into these days. Like, I think it's Bud Light going, you know, we were here first.
Right.
We're always going to be here. We're kind of the king
of beer.
Right. And when you go to a tailgate, you'll see a lot of people drinking Bud Light. And now you'll start to hear them say Dilly Dilly.
I mean, I guess. I don't see in a commercial like that. I like the commercial a lot, but it's not going to make me crave a Bud Light. And I think that's their ultimate goal. Or maybe brand awareness is, or probably a little bit of both, is their ultimate goal. But
Dilly Dilly.
Dilly Dilly. I just love it.
Like, I remember looking into a beer tub on Sunday and only seeing Bud Light. And I was like, oh. Okay. This lack of options.
I love it. I think it's great.
Craft beer has spoiled me, I think. It's changed my taste buds.
I will say Bud Light is the perfect beer if you're walking into a stadium and you have to drink a beer quickly. And by have to, I mean you choose to drink a beer quickly. I think Bud Light's the perfect one because you're not going to down an IPA in that short stadium.
Yeah,
it's the closest thing to water. That's why.
Exactly.
No, that would be Natural Light.
Bud Light was actually specifically designed in order to drink all day. Like the IPAs are more like wine. Like you enjoy it with a meal and they have meal pairings and all this good stuff. But Bud Light was designed to drink all day.
Jaguars opened up as 3-point favorites over the Seahawks. Do the Seahawks scare you? We'll get into that. You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes on 92.5 FM.
Dilly Dilly!
Dilly Dilly! Dilly, dilly.
Jaguars football. 5 women, 4 women.
and men. Helmets and heels. Built by Dreamfinders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Thanks for tuning in to Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Finders Homes. Donna Murphy, Blythe Brumleave, Lauren Brooks, and Tyler Devitt with you tonight. The Jaguars are 8-4. The Seahawks are 8-4. Therefore, we have a collision of two teams trying to make it to the playoffs. For the Jaguars, the first time since 2007. The Seahawks, meanwhile, have been a little bit better in the last decade. So, do the Seahawks scare you?
Hell yeah! I think you're allowed to say hell, right?
Yeah, yes. Yes.
Hell yeah, they scare me. Russell Wilson, I heard a stat yesterday. He accounts for 86% of the offensive yards for the Seahawks. 86%. Is nobody helping him? A bad O-line. Richard Sherman, Shepard Cox are missing on defense, and this team still continues to win. And I wonder, with sort of the last 2 minutes with Doug Marrone against the Cardinals, how that will affect his game planning against Pete Carroll, you know, Super Bowl winning coach. How does that, because Bruce Arians is a hell of a coach. And Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, that's the best duo, quarterback coach duo, that they're probably going to face all season.
Well, not unless they go further into the playoffs.
That's
Look, Pete Carroll can be crafty and then can shoot himself in his own foot because he will do stupid stuff. Like throwing it in the end zone with one to go. You know, like he will do stupid stuff because he will try to outsmart you and that will backfire on him. I got to say, like I brought up, you go to NFL.com stats. And the Jaguars are first in 3 of the 6 categories. That's fantastic. Do you know where the Seahawks are? They're not in the top 5 of any of the categories.
All right.
So when we talked about this a few weeks ago, when we said, which games are they going to lose? I immediately said Arizona and I said Seattle. My mind has likely changed for the fact of the few weeks that I've seen Seattle play and what I've seen the Jags do. Now, with the Jags, with what they did Sunday against the Colts, that doesn't sway me because it's the Colts. You can't get excited. I mean, you can get excited. Don't get me wrong, but it's still, it's a crap team that you stomped, which you should do anyways. You know, when you play like this against Pittsburgh or Baltimore and you stomp them and make them look ridiculous, that's when you get really excited and be like, whoa, this team is something great. So with Seattle, yeah, Russell Wilson scares you, but then you also remember that Luke Joeckel is on that line and it's like, well, as long as we can contain you, you know, should be okay. And either way, we got that the number one defense, so it's more of if the offensive line for the Jags can hold up and withstand that defense.
Yeah, to me, one of the fascinating storylines is the fact that the torch has kind of been passed from Seattle's defense to the Jaguars' defense. Mm-hmm. And yes, they're missing Sherman and Cam Chancellor, but at the same time, they still have studs on that defensive side of the ball. And that's what scares me. The Seattle offense doesn't truly scare me. I think Jimmy Graham is a fantastic tight end. Russell Wilson obviously is a mobile quarterback that is so incredibly smart. But he doesn't have receivers that are going to scare me going up against Jalen and A.J. Boye. And hopefully Talvin Smith is back so that middle of the defense is shored up. And even if he's not, we did see Paul play really well last week, Posluszny. So I'm not that worried about their offense. And they've played, I think I read, like 15 different guys have taken, or different times they've had to start at tailback, like because they've just, their tailback position, their running backs have just been injured so often. So the defense, though, on the other hand, scares me in the sense that when was the last time the Jaguars offense put together a really good game against a good defense?
Right, exactly.
Has it been since the Ravens?
Maybe, and they Steelers? Weren't stellar at the time.
Yeah. A lot of it's tough to gauge the success of victories earlier in the season because the teams like the Ravens and Steelers are finding their strides now. And, well, I guess maybe the Steelers are a little bit questionable with their performance against the Bengals last week or last night. But you teams like Seattle, these is what I call organizational goals, because they used to be nobody until they went to two Super Bowls, and Russell Wilson earned one of them, very, very close to winning a second one. And this is an organization that's highly respected. It's where the Jaguars want to be. They want to take that next step. This game almost feels like, it's definitely a measuring stick, but it almost feels kind of like the Raiders game last year. Because the Raiders game was really the measuring stick last year. You know, both teams were on the same rebuilding path. Both quarterbacks were drafted in the same year. You had all these different comparisons of former Jags head coach and Jack Del Rio's across the field on the other sideline. And that was a true measuring stick. And we were embarrassed that game. Mm-hmm. And this feels like another one of those measuring stick games where you really want to see where this team is at physically and mentally. Because I think mentally this is going to be a large factor in this game.
We can look at matchups all day, but what do you think the overriding feeling is in the fan base? Do you think it's a Jaguars absolutely have a chance to win this game, or do you think most people are going, yeah, this is going to be a loss, but it'll be fun because it kicks off at 4:25?
I feel like it's, if you're one of the people like me that watches scary movies where you cover your eyes, but you kind of open them a little bit, you're like, that's what it seems like to me. Like, I want to watch it, and I think they're going to win, but I don't really. That's what it's like. Like, I want to say it, but, you know, you don't want to say it out loud because you don't want it out there.
You don't
want to
jinx it.
Right.
I'm extremely nervous about this game, but I think it's a game that they can win, and I think that's what makes me so nervous, is that I want them to win so badly, and I want them to prove, because this is going to be the closest thing to a primetime game regular season wise that the Jaguars are going to get this season. I know Jalen Ramsey had some comments that, you know, 4 p.m. feels a lot like a 1 p.m. game. He wants the primetime matchup, but this is, if the Jaguars can handle the Seahawks, this nationally will give the team a lot more respect.
Well, and I think it eventually comes down to, can the Jaguars get the run game back on track and complete passes like they were able to do against the Colts? The only problem is you're playing a much better defense and defensive backs than you are against the Colts. A much, you know, one of the best safeties in the game, and Earl Thomas is going to be hanging back there. And the Colts are still young on defense.
But, like, Bortles hit a fade in the corner of the end zone. I said, oh, my gosh, it was a fade in the corner of the end zone. It actually stayed in bounds, and it wasn't a wobble.
He had a great game on
Sunday.
Yeah,
there were a lot of passes that I thought were not – ducks, and were, if not perfect spirals, they were very close to that. I was impressed.
But, like, you get happy, you know, and excited about that, and then you second guess yourself. You're like, man, I'm really just happy that he threw a spiral. Is that where I'm at right now?
As all the praise that you hear about Bortles is that, well, he remained really composed, and, you know, he didn't throw any interceptions. These are things that you're supposed to already be doing. And it's almost like a kindergarten or a dog where you have, good dog. You don't want to rub his nose in it.
Right.
This is a good dog. You give him a little treat.
This week, the cat signal will go off at 4 o'clock in order to get fans in the stands before the game starts. Blythe, you were already in the stadium, but did you get the sense that there were more people filling the stands than normal at the time before kickoff?
No, not really. It was actually a really smooth transition in order to get into the stadium, because there have been a couple times where we've been running a little late from the tailgate in order to get in, and it feels like forever. But one game in particular actually caught the flyover while we were still checking into the game itself, so that was a little frustrating. And we were trying to make our way up to our little viewing area where we watched the flyovers come in, and we heard the cat call going off, or the cat signal. It's a cat signal, right?
It's cat signal, but I
like
heard
the bat
a lot
signal.
Of people call it cat call.
Which I'm cool with cat call, too.
Yeah.
I like either one.
Yeah, but that means a completely different thing.
It does. But as long as whatever you call it, if you're paying attention to it, I think that's a good thing if it does remind people to kind of, you know, get your butt in gear, because this team really wants to feel the energy right from the start. And in games like facing Seattle, that's going to be important to feel that, you know, that energy behind you. Some people, Blythe, you said, were not super excited about the crowd at Jaguars Colts.
That's what I hear, especially on a national scale. It was, you know, you take the picture of when players are on the field, and you don't really know when they're taking the picture. And I don't know that it matters, I guess, from a national perspective. But you see them tweeting out pictures of attendance and making fun of Jaguar, quote-unquote, fans. Like, oh, you know, I thought there was only 5 people that go to the games and things like that. And I just think that what a lot of outsiders don't fully grasp is that a lot of fans just buy a nosebleed ticket, and then they just get in and they sit with their buddies or they sit with their friends or they go to either one of the end zones, which has some really great entertainment options. Not to mention Daly's Place, which is the concert venue that lines right up against the south end zone. They have the TV. They have the big screen TVs that show a live feed of the game. And so especially during the more of the warmer games, we found ourselves hanging out in there. So from an outsider's point of view, if you see that picture, I could see how you second guess yourself. But the Jaguars' attendance, I mean, it is kind of, I think it's like 29th in the league right now. So it is kind of low, but it's still 62,000 people on average for every single game. The stadium is already bigger than than the market suggests it should be. But it's that large because of Florida, Georgia.
And if they take that picture when it's like, say, the first 5 minutes of the game or coming right after halftime, something like that. Obviously, it's like the beginning when you watch, you know, a baseball game. Not everybody is there in the first inning.
Right.
They end up there maybe by the third inning is when everybody gets there. It's just normal. And I know, like you said, you have the FanDuelville and everybody and all the club seats. People aren't in their seats. They're in the air conditioner or whatnot. So it'll obviously be different against the Seahawks. This is a huge, huge game. You know how many people actually like the Colts?
Well, I will. It's sort of a difference. And I think the lay of the game also makes a difference, too, because for the Chargers game, there was a point where my brother was like, for overtime, do you want to go over to the cabana areas and watch it with, all, you know, a whole group that we tailgate with? And I said, no. And then my dad was like, well, do you want to move closer? I said, no, we're going to stay right here in our seats. We're not going to move because this is where the good things happen. But then for the Colts game, it's a blowout. So we leave at the start of the fourth quarter and go over to the cabana area and watch the rest of the game there.
Yeah, and that's the nice part about the video boards is it allows you to be able to be in areas like FanDuelville, and you're able to watch the game from the end zone perspective, and then you're also able to see everything that happens on the video boards too, so you're not missing anything. But it is going to be interesting to see how many Seahawks fans are in attendance at Sunday's game.
Obviously, I think there's going to be a lot.
I think there's certainly well more than there were Colts fans.
Oh, for sure.
Obviously.
The Colts historically don't travel well. But for some of the – I looked at the average temperature for Seattle today, and I think their high was like 43 degrees for today. So for a lot of Seahawks fans, they probably booked this trip well in advance, and then now it actually means something. It was probably going to be like a Florida vacation earlier in the year, and then now it's like, oh, well, you know, we have to actually take this game seriously.
And I wonder if we were to ask Seahawks fans if they are nervous or if they do just remember kind of, yeah, Jaguars defense is good, but, you know, that's not traditionally a team that is going to win big games, so whatever. I wonder if they're just kind of looking at it like that.
Well, we'll have a girl on Sunday on the kickoff show, and Melissa with Girls Chat Sports, and she's flying in from Seattle, big Seattle Seahawks fan, and she's flying in to this game, and she's been planning it since the summer. Hmm. So I think that's sort of that instance, because I think it was Chicago Bears a few years ago that it was cheaper for a Bears fan to fly to Jacksonville, stay at a hotel, go to the game, fly back than it was to go see a game at Soldier Field.
Oof. That's expensive then.
So it could be the same for Seattle, Green Bay, those I guess more solidified markets.
Yeah, certainly people who you know, there's what in Green Bay there's like you have to will your tickets to people.
Yeah.
How it used to be at Florida Field, it certainly has changed there. It wasn't sold out there as well. All right, when we get it back, we will get it to around the NFL and to a team we mentioned a little bit earlier in the Giants. You'll see the Helmets and Heels built by Dream Fenders Homes on 92.5 FM.
Girls just want to talk football. More Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
Now on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Song choice, Tyler. Welcome back into Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. My name is Blythe, and I'm joined alongside Donna Murphy and Lauren Brooks. And we talked earlier in the show about the Giants and sort of the significance of Tom Coughlin coming to Jacksonville and how much of a mess that they are. And in case you've been living under a rock and you don't know the story, but Eli was offered up a pity start and chose not to accept it last week. Then head coach Ben McAdoo was going to sit him in favor of Geno Smith. And when sort of the firestorm erupted around that, head coach Ben McAdoo was then fired, and so was the GM. But if you were Eli and you were offered up the start, a pity start, after you had already been told that you were going to be benched, would you start the game?
I absolutely would have started the game because I know in my heart that I'm one of the best players the Giants have ever had at quarterback, and I deserve to continue the streak. I'm not playing poorly. It's the team around me that has really fallen off the face of the earth, and certainly they've had injuries, but they've been terrible, and he's not the reason that the Giants have been losing. So I would have started the game, taken my consecutive start, what would it have been, like 211th or something like that, and I would have understood that if people wanted to put the asterisk on it, that's fine, but that's not my fault.
I don't know how to answer this one because, yes, I could say I agree with Lauren in one sense, but then I might have done it out of spite to make the coaches look bad. Mm-hmm. Like, here you go. Yeah, sure, I'm going to come out here. I'm going to kneel, and then I'm going to walk off and just be like and sit on the bench. Bye. That's what you wanted me to do. I started and knelt, and now you go and try to win this game. So part of me has that one, but then also it's like – oh, man, I'm not going to embarrass myself and go out there just because I want to have, you know, one record. You know, it's so obviously to me, it seems like Eli isn't all about Eli. Like Peyton is all about Peyton. Peyton would have started that game. He for sure, because he wants every record with his name on it, possibly. And Eli obviously doesn't seem that way. So I think he took the higher road, was like you guys are going to look like a mess, so I'm just going to sit back and watch this circus go.
It's almost like a little bit of your pride is like, okay, if you don't want me to start, then I'm not going to start. You can't come back. You can't come crawling back now. I heard one reporter sort of equate it to somebody breaking up with you and then wanting to get right back together. Do you sort of just sit and let them suffer, or do you want what's best for you in your life almost?
I mean, I think he did the right thing in the sense of they made themselves look ridiculous, and now that problem for him is solved, and now he can go back out there and play.
Do you believe the rumor that the owner, Mara, knew? He was out of town when this decision was made by Ben McAdoo, supposedly, and he came back into town and then found out sort of what happened around the controversy with benching Eli and all that good stuff. Do you believe that Mara didn't know that it was going to happen this way? Or should ownership have to sign off on something like that?
Well, when reports are all over Twitter, to me, Mara could have stepped in as soon as he found out, which would have been still before the game, because this reports came out, what, on Thursday of last week? Mm-hmm. And so at that point, he could have stepped in and said, McAdoo, yo, you're out. You're not even going to coach this football game, and Eli's going to start. So he still could have stepped in and taken control of the situation. I found it really ridiculous that they let McAdoo coach and then fired him on Monday after, when obviously you know full well they were planning to fire him because it came out Sunday he was going to be fired the next day, even before the game.
I can't even say his last name. It's too much like wackadoo. So
that's what he looks like, as a wackadoo.
He is.
Any chance of the Hail Mary by McAdoo in order to bench Eli in favor of Geno to save his job?
No, not a chance.
No. Maybe he was trying to go after Texas A&M job.
You know? Or Tennessee.
Or well, Tennessee. Or
he would make a lot more money.
What if there's, I guess, the sense that this is a big boy league, and if you don't take care of the job, that because a lot of people thought that this was very cruel, a cruel thing to do to Eli, let him have his start. It was a cruel thing to do to the GM and the head coach. But part of me also feels like this is a big boy league, and if you don't take care of it, you don't take care of business in the NFL, you deserve to be fired and you deserve to be benched.
Look, I'm one of the last few that is going to be on the Eli Manning train, but I don't think it was cruel. I just think it was a stupid move. You think Eli is your problem on that team? He is not your problem, but I can appreciate you trying something new since they're so far out of it. It doesn't really matter. Like, if we were out of it, do you think Bortles would be playing the whole season? Who knows?
No, because of the $19 million option.
Right, it's just, you know, so some things make sense, but you're like, you're so far out of it. He is clearly not your problem, you know? When you have your diva wide receivers, you know, not doing their job or hurt, or that offensive line is just getting bowled over. So,
yeah, I don't know. If he had started Davis Webb to say, hey, we need to see what we have in the future, you know, and talk to Eli and said, look, it's not you, but I do need to see what I've got.
Not Geno.
Right. You already know what you have in Geno.
Right. And truth be told, I expected Geno to play a lot worse than he did. And he didn't play as poorly as I thought. But still, it's like the whole thing is just a disaster. You don't pick Geno Smith over Eli Manning unless there's something wrong with Eli Manning.
Right. There was I think it was on the Dan Patrick Show that he was talking about how when Coughlin was up there with the Giants and how Mara used to run a lot of those decisions through Coughlin just to be able to sort of get that football feel to it, because he's Mara sort of like Khan, where he needs that football mm-hmm. buffer in between, and just to see the stark differences between the way the Giants are handling their all of their various crises and situations, and see how the Jaguars are handling theirs. It's a night and day difference. It really makes you appreciate what you got in Tom Coughlin.
Well, and it really should, for the sense of, you know, the Jags had Coughlin here first, and then so-called got run out of town, and it kind of went downhill with the exception of a few years. And the Giants won 2 Super Bowls, and he gets run out of town, and now look at... So clearly Coughlin is very good. He is very good.
Well, and, you know, Tom Coughlin was on both the Drill and Frank show last Tuesday during the J Fund, obviously to promote people, and thanks to everyone who donated. And he talked about Eli Manning and how it was really upsetting to him. He was certainly on the side of Eli Manning. And to me, you know, that quote was all out there. Like, at mm-hmm. that point, even McAdoo should look up, or Mara should look up and go,
oops.
All right, if Coughlin says this is a bad idea, let's reverse course. So I guess it came out before Thursday then, because we were talking about it on Tuesday. So yeah, it came out on Tuesday.
Well, if you remember, after when Tom Coughlin was sort of, you know, kicked to the curb, he gave that press conference afterwards, and all of the Giants players were there. And Eli Manning was crying. He had to wipe tears away from his eyes because Coughlin looked him in the eyes and said, this is not your fault. It's not on you. And mm-hmm. that brought tears to Eli's eyes. So it sort of
same with getting benched. He was almost crying. Kind of was crying in the locker room a week ago when he had to talk about it. It's frustrating to think of someone doing their absolute best and then still getting treated poorly. I think that's the part that frustrates you. You know, we all know people who are lazy. Eli Manning's not lazy, and he's not playing nearly as badly as the rest of that team.
He just has that dodo face. Like, he never knows what's going on.
I always thought he was way cuter than Peyton. Not that anyone's like, oh, Peyton's hot or anything like that. But I think Eli is much more attractive than Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got no comment for either of them.
Yeah, yuck on both of them.
Well, fine then.
We're going into more yuck. There's been a few cheap shots in the NFL as of late, especially over this past weekend between the Gronk hit and then last night, Monday Night Football with the Steelers versus the Bengals.
That's nasty.
Despite the NFL attempting to make the league safer, what can the league do about the other suspensions when players sort of take it into their own hands?
I mean, I was so frustrated after that. I didn't see the Gronk hit. I had to go back and look at it. And I was so upset and disappointed and knew that if the league didn't do something, Belichick was going to do something. Because when you put yourself in the position that Belichick has to apologize for you, you are gone. And he's lucky he's not gone from the team because of who he
Belichick
is.
Belichick knows Rob Gronkowski's work too much.
Well, he let Chandler Jones go. There's a lot of players that go, and we don't know what happened. You never know of anything that happened. It's just poof, they're gone.
Chandler Jones made a lot of dumb mistakes over the weekend, too, in that Chiefs game.
So I wouldn't, I wasn't going to be surprised by
Cardinals. He plays for the Cardinals.
Oh, yeah, sorry, my bad.
So I wouldn't have been surprised by anything that happened. And now that, you know, it says that the appeal was upheld, so he's going to miss the game against the Dolphins. That's just, and the Juju one wouldn't have been as bad if he didn't taunt.
Yeah, that was my issue with it. I didn't have a problem with the hit.
No.
It was the taunting afterwards. And I didn't think that he got suspended. The NFL announced today that he got suspended for a game. I didn't agree with that. I thought he should have got fined, not suspended.
Well, and that's the thing. He didn't get thrown out, correct?
No.
That's why he's missing a game. Because everybody's trying to do the, well, with Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Green, you know, they didn't get suspended. Well, yeah, but they got tossed from the game immediately. So they did miss the game. That's why they just got, you know, just the nice little, or Green just got the nice little fine. So Gronk didn't get tossed. You know, they didn't get tossed. This is why they have to have the suspension. And I know everybody's up and they're trying to compare. Well, this one should be more and this one should be less and that one should be. Look, until they don't have a definitive, all right, so this is what you did after the whistle blew. So that's an automatic 2 game. This is what you did during the game. You led with your head. They don't have that. How they still don't have it, we don't know, but. Both those hits.
That'll
ridiculous.
Get addressed in the new CBA as far as the defining certain things. But to me, taunting almost should just equate to an ejection at this point, because that's when we're starting to see the fights really start to happen. When players go beyond that mm-hmm. trash talking and it moves into the point where they're taunting and the refs have to throw the flag on that.
Right.
The game last night, I think it's a little bit frustrating for either Steelers fans or anyone who's anti-Vontaze Burfict, because Burfict literally has like an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty in almost every single game and gets suspended, and he's the one who the hit goes
right?
on.
Right? I don't know how he's even still in the league. Every time they suspend him, they go, this will be your last one.
Right.
And you have another chance. I don't get it.
Yeah, he's one of the dirtiest players in the NFL.
Yes.
So it's frustrating that here, like, to me, I kind of laughed. Like, the wide receiver lays the hit on him, and he ends up going out. But don't taunt him. That's where you should be mm-hmm. smarter than that, Juju. Don't stand over a player ever, under any circumstances, at least in the way that I think it should work, or else you are going to get ejected, and that can affect your football team. And certainly a suspension can, too. But I almost wonder if that was a premeditated decision to have a rookie wide receiver as
right.
the one going after Vontaze, because if he were to get suspended, the Steelers aren't missing Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, right, one of their stars. They're just missing the rookie.
Martavius Bryant would have been like, oh, sorry. Juju.
I think we have a little bit of sound from the karma aspect of the Antonio Brown hit and involving Burfict.
I didn't know it was Burfict at first. All I saw was the first Bengals dude that was going to tackle Le'Veon. So in my instinct, I got a block from my teammate, and me just playing ball, I hit him. After I seen the replay, I think I should have held back a little bit more and just, from blocking him.
Hey, and sure, I got straight cash on him.
I also believe that that's not me. I should never stood over him. I apologize for that. And
it's called
with that,
karma.
With that being said,
it's called
I hope
karma.
He gets better.
Man, poor Juju. Is he like, I don't.
He's trying to answer it so respectfully, and it's just not. You got Antonio Brown in the background there yelling karma.
Is
and
he filming
before
that while
he yells,
he's doing
I
it?
Got straight cash on it, which yeah. makes me think that he's actually proving my point correct, that they had Juju kind of, premeditating that. But Juju's like, oh, I didn't even know who it was. I didn't know which player that was. And he may be telling the truth. But I am a little bit, I guess, less naive than I used to be, and I feel like that played out perfectly for this.
Well, I think that he didn't know it in the heat of the moment when he's hitting him, but after he's over it, standing over him, taunting him, he knows exactly what he's doing. And I think that that happens as far as, Brown talking about cash in the background. That happens more often than the league would like to admit, because I think it's Larry Fitzgerald that will pay an opposing player or pay an opposing corner. If they hit him, he doesn't want them to hit him in his knees. He says, go high because I'll pay your fine if you hit me, concussion, hit helmet to helmet,
like
that time
Larry
of hit.
Larry would do. Yeah.
Interesting. You'd think that he'd be like, I'll fine or I won't pay your fine if it is a helmet to helmet, but certainly as it's not knees.
Well, I mean,
knees
just
takes him out and that could ruin his career.
Exactly.
Yeah. But so could targeting helmet to helmet, that kind
but
of
that
thing
I think with that, that's a little bit more of a. Some guys are more susceptible to concussions than they mm-hmm. aren't than other guys, and so I think that that's where that plays a role. It's obviously very scary for a guy like Wes Welker or something like that, but maybe Larry Fitzgerald is not as scary, and he would rather have his knees than his head.
Well, and certainly, hopefully, Ryan Shazier is going to be okay. The Steelers linebacker who went in with his helmet last night and ended up having to get taken in an ambulance to the hospital. He did tell one of the guys on his team, Vince Williams, that he was able to move his extremities as he was going off the field, but he's still in a kind of a precarious situation.
I think
he's
still
at the hospital.
They did some testing at the hospital today, and it looks pretty good. It's not going to require surgery. Right now, I think it just looks like a bruise.
Yeah, they said a spinal contusion, but also, like, the next 24 to 36 hours are really critical.
Right.
So even though it may not require surgery, I guess it could still, and obviously I know nothing beyond what we're hearing, but it still seems like he's in a little bit of a scary situation. So hopefully, some people don't think he could potentially play again. Hopefully that is not the case.
For sure.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk to Lari Fitzpatrick, and we're going to get into more of X's and O's with her for the Jaguars-Seahawks game coming up this Sunday. You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes on 92.5 FM. On your way into Sunday's Jaguars game against the Seahawks, make sure you stop by the brand new Dreamfinders Stadium home at Everbank Field. Located inside Gate 4, this brand new constructed home is now open and welcome for you to view and tour. While you're there, don't forget to register for an opportunity to win, wait for this, an Apple Watch. It's open starting at 10 a.m. on Sunday. Actually, this Sunday it'll be open closer to around 1 p.m. Tour the brand new stadium home 2.0 by Dreamfinders Homes this Sunday.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Brissett drops to throw. Fires to the middle of the field. Intercepted by Jalen Ramsey. To the 10, to the 15 of Jacksonville. Still on his feet is Jalen. Out past the 20-yard line. Jalen Ramsey turned him away. He picked it off and runs it back to the 25-yard line. Brissett fires to the middle of the field. Picked off. That is intercepted by Tashawn Gibson, and the Jags get it back. Boy, that Jaguar secondary is absolutely tremendous. Tashawn broke on the ball, picked it off, and the Jags take over at their own 48-yard line.
Welcome back into Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. And we're actually going to be live at Dreamfinders Stadium Home next Tuesday. But for tonight, we are joined by former LFL player Laurie Fitzpatrick, and she's the host of Ponytails Talking Pigskin podcast, as well as Big Cat Country's Film Room creator. And she joins us now for the second time this season to break down one of the most important games on the season. And Laurie, we asked a similar question earlier in the show, but I was curious to hear your take. Outside of Russell Wilson, who makes you the most nervous on the Seahawks team?
Seahawks team. I would say Wagner. Mm-hmm. He's absolutely killing it. And just the defense in general is they put a lot of pressure last night on Carson Wentz, and Carson Wentz is great on his feet. Blake Bortles is great on his feet. I just think Blake needs to make some quick decisions this Sunday, and don't let this defense put him on the ground. We don't want any sacks. We want quick passes. The outside is important. D.D. Westbrook he's really stepped it up. Last week he did really well. I think down the sideline we need to attack Byron Maxwell in that defense, since they lost a couple players this season.
Did you learn anything about this Jags team after the win and dominance over the Colts?
Yes, I actually learned. I really enjoyed Paz last week. He absolutely killed it. I think he really stepped it up, especially with Telvin out. They played a little bit more nickel than I would have thought, but Paz definitely got in there and stopped the run. He was able to get a couple sacks, which was great. So I think him stepping up was really great for him, especially going into this week.
Calais Campbell has sacked Russell Wilson the most of all quarterbacks in his career. Will he be able to get to the elusive Wilson on Sunday?
Yes. I think just as long as we can contain him, we have Fowler and Ngakoue on the outside, force him in the middle. I think Campbell can actually play like inside this week to really, like, when Russell tries to get around Ngakoue, which is one of the quickest guys coming out of the end, he's going to try to go up the middle, and Campbell's going to be right there to sack him. I think we have a really, really good defensive line. We're sacking. We have the most, I believe, sacks, or definitely top five. So I know that we just got to force him in the middle, and our linebackers have to stay home. And I think we have a really good chance of this being a very, very good game.
When you're looking at the film, who's the most underrated player on offense that sort of jumps out to you?
On offense, it's tough. I would say Mercedes Lewis, and it's hard to say that he's underrated, especially being in the league as long as he has. But every single time he's making plays, it just gets our entire offense in a rhythm. And you saw it last week. The more balls he gets, we just happen to go down the field a little bit more, and we'll run it, ground and pound it. But if we can get Mercedes Lewis the ball in the seam, especially in the middle of the field against the Seahawks, I think the Eagles actually should have used Selleck more in the middle of the field. I think if we utilize O'Shaughnessy and Lewis and Koyak, I think we have a good chance of just ground and pound and keep the time of possession. Usually when we're getting a lot of our wins this season, we had 30 or plus minutes time of possession. So that's really important this week.
So taking a look at this new Jacksonville Jaguars team, what has surprised you the most? Would it be the offensive line play? Would it be how phenomenal the defense is? Or would it be the surprising comeback, I would have to say, of the special teams for how horrendous they were at the beginning of the season.
Well, I would say the play calling for the special teams have been great. I like Grant with kickoff returns more than I like Mickens. Mickens had a great return early in the season, but I think Grant is more elusive. He's quicker, obviously, and I really like the play calling with the fake punts because you have a little bit to lose, but if you're in the middle of the field and you're going to punt it, fake punt is the way to go. But most surprising, I actually really like Gibson. And everybody knew coming from the Browns he was a good player. But until Barry Church came along, he really was able to flourish. So I've really enjoyed his play so far. And Aaron Colvin also. He's one guy that really isn't talked about as much as the other corners, AJ and Ramsey. And he should be. And I'm glad Ramsey called him out and let everybody know that, hey, we need to keep Colvin. I think we have the best trio of defensive backs, actually corners in the league. Not just the duo, the trio. Aaron Colvin is definitely a guy to watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, in that nickel spot. The only problem is I'm not sure they're going to want to pay him. But regardless, yeah. We'll worry about that next year. This year we got to march to the playoffs. Laurie Fitzpatrick joining us. Laurie, question for you about the run game. Is it on Leonard Fournette to find some more holes, or is it on the offensive line to create some, or is it a combination of both as to why this run game isn't going as well as it was early on in the season?
Well, it's definitely a combination of both. I would say, the entire season is built into four separate quarters, right? Four games generally per quarter. And the first two, Leonard Fournette, absolutely hitting the hole full speed, but we also had a healthy offensive line. The last couple games, everybody has been saying, I'm reading on Twitter, Leonard Fournette doesn't have it anymore, he's not as good, it's his ankle. I don't think anybody realizes how big of an impact Omame and Parnell being gone. Omame is one of the best pullers in the entire NFL almost. I can't go that far and say that because he still has a lot to prove. But to Leonard Fournette, that was his main guy. And Brandon Linder got hurt. Cam Robinson, he's a rookie, and he's holding down the left side of the line for Fournette to get out to the outside. But I would definitely say it's a combination of both. He's not hitting the hole as quickly as he was in the first half of the season. He's stutter stepping a little bit. I can't tell if it's not confident in the line and the holes being there, or if it's his ankle and he's really just taking his time, but he needs to hit it a little bit harder than he has been. And he has missed a couple of the holes, but I think it's definitely a combination of both.
From a fan perspective, Dede Westbrook has looked great to me over the past few games. But from a film perspective, does he has the capabilities, I think, to be a strong number two. But what about becoming a true number one wide receiver for this team?
I think it's all depending on his hands, if he can catch the ball. And Blake he's actually playing pretty well, especially last game. He's putting it right where these guys are. If it hits your hands, you should be catching it. There was that one crucial third down play where Dede dropped it. And if you want to be the number one wide receiver, you can't drop those passes, especially on third down. You have to make those plays. I think Dede has the chance to be that number one. He just has to have a little bit more games underneath his belt. He was out a lot of the first half of the season. So if he just continues to play, I like Lee in the slot. I like him as the number two. And I like that teams right now are focusing on Lee. And so this gives a chance for Keelan Cole, who got his first touchdown last week, and Dede Westbrook to really step up and make those plays. So, yeah, I think he has the opportunity. He just needs to get more snaps and get more confidence.
All right, Laurie, so let's take a look at Sunday afternoon. Kickoff happens. What is the key to the win for the Jags?
It's containing Russell Wilson. He is such a smart quarterback. If you saw the game on Sunday, he's right before the line of scrimmage. He's you know, just tossing it right out to the running backs, or he's, the wide receivers are coming back to the ball when they see that he's scrambling. He knows where the line of scrimmage is, and he is either sliding or just dumping it right off. We need to stay smart. We need to stay home. Force him inside. Let our defensive line sack him. Don't let him get outside the hashes. I think just as long as we can contain him and our run game at 4 yards at a time, I think we have a great chance of keeping up with the Seahawks. We have a good chance of possibly beating them. It's all about matchups, and I think we match up really well against them. We have a great secondary. Our corners and our Barry Church and Gibson, they're going to hold these guys down. Baldwin isn't going to get out, and Lockett, they're not going to have the opportunities. It's about shutting down Jimmy Graham, Russell Wilson, and putting him on the turf.
Larry, Doug Marrone eats bologna sandwiches after victories. How would you grade that as a choice of food after a win?
Well, if it's a win, it's an A. But D minus. I do not a fan of bologna.
Same.
But hey, if he's going to keep eating them and we're going to keep getting W's, I will send him bologna all the way up here from Philadelphia if I have to.
I want to go back to Bortles here for a minute. He had one of his worst offensive performances against the Cardinals and then followed it up with one of his best offensive performances last week against the Colts. Can you explain the phenomenon, I guess, that is like good Blake versus bad Blake, and how can he sort of build upon Sunday's consistency?
You know, I don't know if he could even answer that question. But it's one of the, on the broadcast last week, they said when he stays home and he doesn't, you know, his feet are planted and he makes those throws, he does better, obviously, and it gets the offense moving. I think if he can just slide in and out of the inside of the pocket, he has a chance of just making better throws. I'm not sure why he continues to scramble and then try and throw. He needs to choose one or the other. If he's going to scramble, scramble. And I liked when he took over and he decided to run for the first. Don't force a throw if you don't have to. If he just stays inside the pocket, if you don't see it, throw it away. But if you're going to run, run. It's hard to say why he's so inconsistent game to game. It's really hard to say. I think it has a lot to do with the defense, too. It's really the whole team as a whole to really just come together. And once Blake gets frustrated, it's tough to come back from that. So I just think he has to stay home. The run game has to be there because the play action will work if we can actually get yards on offense. As long as Fournette, keep his ankle up. Somebody make sure he doesn't walk at all this week so he's ready to go on Sunday, please. And I think we'll be okay. Just Fournette and Blake need to really just stay focused.
How do you think the game ultimately ends up?
I think it's gonna be a tough one. It's hard to say. I do see it could be a high scoring game. I would like to say maybe 24-20 Seahawks. And it's a shame that I'm even gonna say the Seahawks would win this game, but I think that right now they're playing a little bit better. We got to win against the Colts, but they are the Colts. So if we can prove and beat the Seahawks, there's no doubt that we can take this entire division. So, but I do think, unfortunately, we may take a loss this weekend.
Well, we always appreciate your – yeah, exactly. I definitely second that. But we always appreciate your perspective on especially the Jaguars and the film review. So huge thanks to Laurie Fitzpatrick for joining us tonight. To check out more of her work, you should visit BigCatCountry.com. Subscribe to her podcast at Ponytails Talking Pigskins on iTunes and give her a follow on Twitter at Laurie Fitzpatrick. Thank you, Laurie.
Thank you. Have a good night, guys.
You too. Other than, you know, with all the different things she was saying about how the Jaguars are going to beat the Seahawks, I really thought she was going to go with the Jaguars' victory there.
Right?
Maybe I ruined it with the baloney. By the way, one thing she said, Brandon Linder got hurt. He didn't actually get hurt. He was just sick this week or earlier in the season. So the good news is he was never actually hurt. Just wanted to clarify that. All right, when we come back, we're going to get it to college football. You are listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Finders Homes on 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Finders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Donna Murphy, Bly Brumley, Lauren Brooks, Tyler Sticks Devitt with you on a Tuesday night, rolling along until 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Next Tuesday, we will be at the Dream Finders brand new stadium home,
so
2.0.
Exciting.
I know, so head to 1010XL.com if you'd like to join us, and more importantly, get a tour of the brand new house, and even more importantly, get fed and get served beverages as well. It's a whole lot of fun, and we hope you join us. So again, head to 1010XL.com, and you'll see on our sliding homepage the link to register.
Yes. Rumor is they have a rooftop area that you can check out too.
Oh.
Of the house.
Well, nice. If it's anywhere near cold, I will briefly go up there. If not, then I'd love to do the show from the rooftop.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
Go ahead and put that idea out there into the world.
Can they have a spa? Like, you know,
oh, yeah.
A nice hot tub up
now
there?
Now we're talking.
You know, I think probably they would not want a hot tub for people to be able to go into before Jaguars games.
What about just us? And then everybody just watches us do the show from
the hot tub. Yeah, we could do the show from the hot tub. I like it.
Nice and warm.
Yes. Absolutely. All right.
I would be so mad if I showed up to something like that and watched a bunch of people do a show from a hot tub. You're all just sitting to the side shivering. Why am I here?
Here's your hot chocolate. Enjoy.
I mean, I guess if, you know, we're in bathing suits, they're not going to complain too much, right?
True.
Just, you know, picturing it through somebody else's eyes. All right, the college football bowls, a lot of them have been announced.
Yes.
One that makes, I know, Blythe very happy is the one that will be here in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. I just remembered.
The Tax Slayer Bowl announced during the Jaguars game on
Sunday. That
was awesome.
Yeah,
that it will be Lamar Jackson and Louisville facing Mississippi State. The only problem for Mississippi State is their quarterback, Nick Fitzgerald, dislocated his ankle and won't be there.
Too bad.
Man.
Did confirm a couple weeks ago that he will play in the bowl. So Jacksonville will get to see the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. At that point, he may no longer be the Heisman Trophy winner, although he was invited as one of the three to New York. Yep, but I have a feeling.
Having an even better year than the year before, but he's not going to win it.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's not going to win. But other than the Tax Slayer Bowl, what games are y'all going to be interested in? Any of the ones that are not the college football playoffs?
I am interested in the Belk Bowl.
Is Wake Forest in the Belk Bowl?
That'll be Wake Forest and the Aggies. I am interested in the New Mexico Bowl, which is
Marshall?
11 days away. Yes.
Hey, I'm good at this.
The Thundering Herd.
I'm very good.
We'll
at
be
this.
Playing Colorado State. And I am also interested in the Citrus Bowl. On the first. Who's in the Citrus Bowl?
Who's in the Citrus Bowl?
Can't spell UT without Tennessee, but they're not there. Notre Dame LSU.
Yes, Notre Dame LSU.
LSU played in the Citrus Bowl last year, too, I believe. The one that's in Orlando?
No,
that's the...
Camping World Stadium's in Orlando. But, oh, yeah, Citrus Bowl is there, though.
Yeah, yeah. Louisville played against LSU last year at the Citrus Bowl.
Yes.
Besides, obviously, the main playoff games, but... Those three I am actually interested in.
Aren't you so glad the playoff games are moved to New Year's Day instead of New Year's Eve? Like, everybody in the world, not everybody, but a lot of people will be hungover on New Year's Day, and they're not going to want to do anything other than move from their couch. And you know what? They don't have to.
It was so
they don't even have to go to parties. They can just sit at home and watch the games.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, I guess with my sort of setup, I guess, you have the 30th is the Tax Slayer Bowl, so I'll be going there to watch Louisville play, and then the 31st. Is Jaguars versus Titans, which should come down to the final division game or the final game to win the division. And then on the first, you can just watch college football all day. It's pretty sweet setup.
It is pretty good. And I do think there are some fun matchups. Number 7 UCF taking on number 7 Auburn taking on number 12 UCF.
Yeah, the
UCF
first has a lot of good games.
Yeah, and so I think that one is fun. That one kicks everything off at 12:30. But it's only 30 minutes before your Notre Dame LSU game, so you got to have two TVs for that one. Michigan, South Carolina, do anything for y'all?
No, not really.
Not really.
But Wisconsin, Miami.
Yes.
Yes. That'll be fun.
I feel bad for Miami fans. Even though, yes.
Because nobody's rooting for them?
USC,
well,
Ohio State.
No, more because Miami waited a long time to get to 10 wins, and everything's fallen apart. You know, right. they played terribly
but
against Pitt.
Shouldn't this have been
didn't show up against Clemson.
Shouldn't this have been expected? Wasn't this Mark Richt all the time in Georgia? Oh, we're doing so good. We're doing so good. We're towards the end.
Well, he would he would trip up during the season at Georgia, so I think it was a little bit different. But he did his team did suffer some major injuries. Running back Mark Walton was hurt mid-season, and then just before the Clemson game, they lost their best wide receiver in Amon Richards. So
I want to hear what the excuses will be next year. And it'll be, well, we
like
don't
Mark
have the
Richt?
Same players. It's not that I don't like him. It's just that that's in my mind, which I don't watch college football, but, so this is my definite outsider's view. Mark Richt was known as being great, but not getting them there.
Yeah.
And this is what he did his first year. He was great and didn't get them there.
But doesn't he get a little bit of praise for it being his first year and Miami hasn't had success in so long and that hotbed of talent of...
Well, it's his second year at Miami, but...
I mean, I don't care either way. It's just, like, it doesn't surprise me as this is what happened.
Well, it's usually within year three is I guess, the measuring stick of a
year three is the best
coach.
Year because at that point you've gotten more of your recruits in. Otherwise, you're dealing still with the previous coaches' recruits, which actually ends up helping some guys like Will Muschamp, but other coaches not so much. To me, USC, Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, the Cotton Bowl Classic in Arlington. I keep thinking it's the Rose Bowl because last year USC played Penn State in the Rose Bowl, and this year they've got Ohio State. That, to me, is going to be a fascinating game. Sam Darnold, you know, came into the season with so much hype, the quarterback of Southern Cal, and Wright has thrown a ton of interceptions and really, I mean, USC was kind of knocking on the door as one of those teams that if there had been an 8-team playoff could have gotten in.
He can't come out and go to the NFL,
I don't
right?
think he will, but I think this game will be very fascinating to see him match up against Ohio State. And obviously Ohio State was the team left out, even though they beat Wisconsin and won the conference championship in the Big Ten. We debated it Sunday morning by whether it would be Alabama or Ohio State. And in the end, obviously, one loss, the committee chose Alabama.
Yeah, that
to get
Iowa
in over
loss
Ohio State.
Is what hurt. Is what hurt
of course.
Ohio State the most.
Yeah, you can't lose. You can't let a team that's unranked get 55 on you.
But it's also like, what's the point of even winning your conference after that? There's zero reason, or not zero, but I think I read something like 82% of the teams that have gone to the playoffs have won their conference. So it's sort of an outlier that they did that. You know, Ohio State didn't go. But I still think it's sort of just all ridiculous. Like a part of me kind of just wants to go back to the computer system. Like, because that is, to me, is less biased than a select few people, about a dozen people. I think it was 10 people that made the choice for the final playoffs, and three people had to recuse themselves from actually making a decision. So then
you'll be a recluse on New Year's Day watching college football.
So then you have a situation where 10 people are responsible for millions and millions of dollars. And I just think that I'm not calling for that, saying that it's corrupted now, but if it isn't, it will be very soon. Because 10 people to make that kind of decision where millions of dollars are being thrown around at the sake of who makes the playoffs and who doesn't, I just think it's too easy for corruption to happen.
Well, I think Brent said that the computer system, the old BCS, would have had these four teams in. So in the end, we're really no different than where we were.
Huh, I didn't hear that.
I just want to know if we'll ever get to the so-called like wild card game, like the play-in game. Okay, so you guys, you know, it'll be, who would we be looking at? It would be Ohio State, Wisconsin playing, you
USC.
Know, these two to get to play Georgia or Oklahoma.
Maybe Notre
you know,
Dame.
Like, will we get to the one additional, instead of all these are your bowl games, we'll get to with the playoff, for the playoff of the playoff. You know, just like we have wild card weekend, we have, you know, the division, we have the championship, then we have the Super Bowl. So it's just, you know.
Yeah, I know college football will never go to the same format that the NFL has because they feel like that's too many games. But I do think that it's a very odd timing system that they have set up or scheduled because, so they go basically a month, right? This all got announced on December the 3rd. And then they go almost a month before they play this first college football playoff in the semifinal. And then the playoff actual game for the national championship, the title game, is like a week later.
Right.
So you're allowing someone like Nick Saban an entire month to prepare for Clemson, but then you only give the winner of that game a week to prepare for either Oklahoma or Georgia. So why aren't they speeding it up and having the semis in like 2 weeks, and also beating the NFL's playoffs as far as ratings goes, and then have your title game like another 2 weeks after that and have it more measured out. I don't quite understand.
Increase it to 8 teams and make everybody happy, and then you have games leading all up until on a regular normal schedule leading up until the championship.
Yeah, game. I'd be fine with 11 regular season games in college football and then the 8-team playoff, which would add a game. But that's fine because you know what? You're only going to lose probably a game against a cupcake team. You're not going to sacrifice one of the non-conference games because teams are finding out that that's what propels you a lot of times into these, you know, better situations to make the playoffs.
That was my biggest gripe against Alabama is that they're not scheduling these super tough out-of-conference games. And if you do schedule somebody like a Florida State, you're scheduling them years and years in advance, and you don't really know how that team is going to look when you actually face them.
But Florida State was ranked third in the country when Alabama faced them, and they were certainly one of the teams that everyone was projecting to get into the national title
this year. Yeah, but Saban has a history, and you take advantage where you can. I think there needs to be some kind of a somebody that comes in, speaking of a committee, but somebody that comes in and actually mandates certain schedule requirements for all college teams. Right now, no such mandate exists, and that to me is the easiest way to take advantage of the system. And I guess that if it's there to take advantage of, then why not? But I don't know. It just doesn't feel like I want to see the best teams play. And I think that there's a lot of teams that are out there that could take advantage of an expanded wild card that that any given Sunday sort of football moniker that you hear so often, that it would be exciting to see like a USC or a Notre Dame sort of come up from like the seventh or the eighth spot and wreck the world of 1 and 2 who might not have scheduled any tough games.
Which Alabama last year scheduled USC and they blew them out. So everyone thought, oh, well, USC's trash. And then USC ended up in the Rose Bowl at the end of the season, you know, improved throughout the season. So I don't think we can fault Alabama for the games that they schedule. They at least are trying to schedule.
But if they do schedule those, they schedule them on a neutral site. They're not playing at the home site. So there's a lot of...
Which is genius because you get money for that too.
But that's what I'm talking about is that there should be some kind of a schedule czar that comes out and says like, no, you really can't do this.
All right, a hodgepodge for our final segment. Harry Potter, our football picks. We still have our Peterbrook Chocolate Heel to give away and the worst Christmas songs. That's all next. Stay tuned to 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Yes!
This is not one of our most hated Christmas songs. This is just how we're coming back into our segment about most hated Christmas songs, right, Donna?
Sure. I love you, Frank Frangie.
Yes.
You know this is Frank Frangie, right?
Is it?
Yes!
He recorded a Christmas album.
What? Well, a serious one?
Yeah.
Now, what happened to the full album? Because I've heard there's an actual, 12-track album, but we only have one song.
No, we don't only have one song. It's him.
Ooh.
Why did he do it? Was it lose a bet or something? Or just...
No.
He doesn't sound bad.
No. He wanted to record a Christmas album.
That's how long ago?
Long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Long time ago.
We've had this for a long time.
That's pretty cool.
We'll play this in July for no reason. I love it.
The best story is obviously the Mike Dempsey story when they tried to call in and the caller... Tell us who this is, and the caller said Frank Sinatra. Mike said he laughed the whole segment. He couldn't handle it. Oh, it was too good. So, Christmas songs. Yes, we wanted to know what your most hated Christmas song is. And I'm sorry, I can't do it. I don't have one I hate. Now, I know that you sent us a list, Blythe, and I don't know half these songs that are on this.
With this list in particular, they asked retail workers what their most hated Christmas song is because, I'm sure if you
hear it over and over.
Right, you hear it over and over, it's like nails on a chalkboard.
But I still don't know those songs that they were talking about.
Yeah, I knew some of them, but not all of them. And then there were some that just, I said this off air, but it made me want to go to church. That's how evil these Christmas songs
it's
were.
It's bad.
I like my Christmas pure. That's why I've never watched Die Hard. I know that famous debate of is Die Hard a Christmas movie. Never watched Die Hard until just recently.
And did you like it?
I loved it.
It's a great movie.
I loved it.
It is a great movie.
All right, Tyler, do you have my least favorite Christmas song ready to go?
Simply having a wonderful
Christmas time. I cannot stand this song. But
why?
You can win the Peterbrook Chocolate Heel right now. Text into the 1010XL text line driven by Duval Ford, 641-1010. Name the artist. And you can win the Peterbrook Chocolate Heel for tonight. You like this song?
Love this song. Isn't the
Beatles,
my gosh,
this
right?
This like Casio keyboard in the background. Okay, remember.
Hold on.
It's not the Beatles. But
the Beagles?
Yeah, it's not the Beagles either. It's not the Beatles, but also let's not name who it is right now because we
have to get a winner. That's right.
But I think the keyboard is just sends like shivers down my spine. I can't stand it.
I like it. Like Donna, there's not many Christmas songs I don't like as long as they're pure like this.
Like the
pure nice vibe to it.
NSYNC's Christmas album. NSYNC, you love them or hate them. That is a great Christmas album.
But the best one is Hanson. Hanson's Christmas album.
Have not
Hanson
heard
Snowed In is the best.
I love My Blue Christmas. I love Bing Crosby White
supposed
Christmas.
To be hated Christmas.
I can listen and watch the Nutcracker all day.
This might be an unpopular take, but I don't like this song.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, that's a classic. That's Home Alone.
Home Alone, baby.
Old Brenda Lee.
Yep.
I actually love this song.
Yeah, this is a great song. You can think of the house in Home Alone where he's got all the puppets set up.
Yeah.
I do not like the Mariah Carey Christmas songs.
Oh, I love that.
I think she tries to do too much, and I don't like that. Mm,
that's
like,
that's the upper echelon of Christmas songs.
Let the Christmas song speak for itself. But I also, I love country to death,
yes.
And I don't like a lot of country versions of Christmas songs because I feel like they're trying to make it a little too twangy. And again, just let it breathe. Like the Christmas song is what we've all grown up with. Like, that's why I love like the Bing Crosby albums because I love keep it simple. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of country songs I actually don't like the Christmas version.
There's Christina Aguilera's a couple. I think it's Christina Aguilera's White Christmas or Noel. It's one of the worst. I almost added
Holy Night.
I think so, where she's just going for every verse, and it's just
thanks.
Drill to your temple.
Tyler, do we have a winner for the Peterbrook Chocolate Heel?
Anybody get that one?
Not yet? Okay.
He's looking. He's checking.
All right. He can keep checking. It's not the Beatles, though. We will give you a hint. It's not the Beatles.
Not the Beatles.
All right, you guys ready to make some picks?
Let's do it.
All right. We do still get lucky as we have one college football game this weekend, so we can
thought about that for you.
Right? Just as a reminder, we do one college football game and three NFL games. We pick straight up, not against the spread. Loser at the end of the season after the Super Bowl will have to do the TB12 diet for 1 week, which I have to say I retweeted or liked. I forgot what I did. AJ Boye's...
Yes.
Picture of all of his books.
You liked it.
And he had TB12 right there, his book on his coffee table. I'm like, rock on. See, that's why you're a great player. I got it. All right. Smart.
He's very dedicated, that.
Yes, very dedicated. So it's very tight atop the leaderboard. Lauren, great job last week. You went 4-0.
Heck
so bravo.
Yeah.
Bravo. Yes.
Love when that happens.
It was actually.
Dilly-dilly. Thank you. Now I just need a Bud Light to celebrate.
So, Lauren, you sit at 26 for the week. Blythe and Tyler both tied at 31. And I sit there still just one shy at 32. So very, very, very close.
Ugh, I thought I made up a game this week.
All right. So let's begin. We are going to do Army Navy. I don't think it's hard to know what I'm going to pick here.
Nope.
Yeah.
Let's start with Tyler. I never start with Tyler. Tyler, you go first.
The only thing I know about this game is Navy runs the triple option, so give me Navy.
All right. Lauren.
The one thing I know about this game is that Bill Belichick practiced, and the Patriots practiced at the Navy facilities very recently. That's right. No days off. Give
me
Navy.
Are you talking about Colorado? Because they practiced at the Air Force Academy.
Maybe it was that. But Belichick spends a lot of time around Navy.
Yes.
I know that much.
Yes.
Put it that way.
So Navy?
I got Navy.
Okay.
I don't know who the heck to pick in this either. I have Navy written down, but a part of me feels like I should pick Army to make up a game.
Army has a better schedule or a better record, if that helps you.
Well, I saw that, but they haven't won back-to-back since 1996. Army has it, and last year's win took 14 years to get to.
That was a great game last
year. So I think I still have to go with the dominant force in Navy.
All right. That is going to be a sweep.
Clean sweep, and I don't think we'll have a college football game next week.
After that?
I don't think we'll have any college games next week.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, because the
we have to wait
16th. When is the 16th? It's in 11 days.
Yeah.
So
we won't have any next.
The Marshall game. I'll put the Marshall game on there for us. Clean sweep. We're all picking Navy. obviously. So go Midshipmen. The Eagles at the Rams. Woo-hoo-hoo.
All these picks are tough.
This NFC, the last few weeks of the NFC matchups are ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So, Tyler, who you got, the Eagles or the Rams?
I'm going with the Rams. I've been following the Rams lately, and I just love what Jared Goff's doing. So give me the Rams at home as the Eagles make that cross-country trip.
Lauren?
I think the Eagles bounce back after the loss. Give me Philly.
Bly?
I think Wentz showed that you can damage sort of that little bit of MVP armor. So give me the Rams this week.
All right, and I will go with Lauren. I will go with the Eagles. So we're splitting on that one. Ravens at Steelers. Oh, if we thought the Cincinnati Steelers game was bad, this should be a lot worse.
Be a little chippy.
Yes. What do you got, Tyler?
I'm going to go with the Steelers. I think the Ravens have kind of been overachieving. They're on a three-game winning streak, and I know Blythe is trying to pick up a game here, but I'm going with the Steelers.
Lauren?
Yeah, the Ravens have been improving, but I'm going to go with the home team, the Steelers.
No love for Flacco?
Not yet.
You got to go with the Steelers. I don't know.
No Shazier. You're not going to have Juju, probably.
I don't think it matters.
I'm going to go. I will maybe pick up or lose a game on you guys. So
do it.
I will go with the Ravens on this one. All right. Then we come to our game here. Seattle coming into town for the Jags. Will it be a clean sweep? Tyler.
Clean sweep? I mean, are we all picking the Seahawks here? What are we doing?
I knew that's what you were going to say, Tyler.
I'm going with the Seahawks, clearly. I think Bad Blake comes out, and I don't want to be the bearer of bad news here, but I think Blake might have one of his worst games of the year this year, playing a really good defense. They fall behind. They don't have to pass the ball a ton, and they're going to bait him into some picks, and he's gotten lucky with some picks that were dropped in the defender's hands, so I think this might be the situation where Blake has to manufacture a drive down the stretch and just can't get it done.
Lauren?
I don't like teams when they have to go all the way across the coast. And I think the Seahawks are riding high, celebrating a little bit too much, perhaps, after beating the Eagles, who'd only lost once before. Give me the Jaguars.
Why?
Yeah, I said this on the kickoff show that I thought the Seahawks would be caught looking ahead a little bit with their game against Philly on Sunday night, and then obviously they play the Jags this week, and they play the Rams next week, and that's a must-win game for them. And I can't not pick the Jags. And Odd Sharks has this game. They do some score predictions. They have the Jaguars winning 30-12 as far as predictions are going to go. And I can't not pick the Jags, so just give me the Jags.
That would be a shock, 30-12.
Although, in two games this season, one the Seahawks won and one the Seahawks lost, they only scored 12 points. Just maybe that's where it's coming from.
Well, computer predictions, almost like a Madden simulation.
Okay.
So they run these several times, like several hundred times, in order to come up with the score average. And I guess that was the score average, 30-12.
Well, a few weeks ago, I said that Arizona and Seattle would be the Jags' last two losses of the season. I was correct with Arizona, but I'm going to switch my Seattle pick.
All right.
So I'm going to pick the Jags. I do have them losing another game, but not this week.
Devitt Island with the Seahawks.
Yep, you're all alone.
Game picker upper over here.
Dang it.
You could be. You definitely could be. So those are...
What's the scores again?
32,
31, and 26.
Yeah, 32. Blythe, you and Tyler tied at 31.
I could have sworn I tied it up this weekend.
Well, okay. He has one game different than you, so... Either you're going to go up or you're going to go down.
No, I was talking to you. I wasn't even worried about... Sorry, I wasn't worried about Tyler.
I thought for sure. Week, that's what
I'm like, me and Donna are tied now.
That's because Lauren and I both picked Jimmy G last week.
I think it was...
I remember that was whole argument. Remember now.
Auburn, Georgia. I think it was, Auburn and Georgia.
Yeah, I went
that
on
my own that I thought.
Y'all took the Bears and we took the 49ers.
Yes.
And we were victorious.
That's what helped.
Last second field goal, too.
It's Jimmy G.
Donna, you went to
kicker now.
Harry Potter?
So we went to Universal this past weekend. We went to Disney earlier in the year, and bringing a then 4-year-old boy to Disney is just...
Just bring me next time.
It's ridiculous.
Leave
there's
the
no
kid
point.
At home. Take me.
Well, there's no point to it, you know, especially for boys. You bring a 4-year-old girl, she's going to be princessed out and awesome.
Well, they have pirates and Star Wars characters and all that.
Boring.
He doesn't like Star Wars? Or he's more superhero.
He's more
superhero. Star Wars is a superhero too, but
boring. It's flat out so boring. Plus, it is so crowded. You go to Universal, and it's wide open. It's so much better. I will go there anytime. Absolutely anytime. Wide open. You have all the superheroes and they come out and you get to meet all the superheroes. And
for now, anyways.
Yeah, for now. If you haven't been in Islands of Adventure, there's Jurassic World and there's a Jurassic Camp. And you literally can lose your child because we lost him. We flat out lost him and ran around looking for him. It is a giant.
Were you like in a panic mode or like, okay, we know he's here somewhere?
Well, what happened was, he he hooked up with another little boy and they were playing and they were the same age and ironically enough had a Bruins hat. So he found the good kid out of him. He met a Boston kid and I was chatting it up with the mom. And then all of a sudden we look around and we go, where'd they go? I don't know where they go. And she don't care because that's her second kid. And I'm freaking out because that's my first kid. So I'm like, no! So we're running one way. But they have ropes and stairs and tree houses and slides that go into tunnels and caves. And it's almost impossible. But somehow he was with the kid just running around. So we found him. But, yeah, I ruined him. I took him on that Spider-Man ride. You know do you know the Spider-Man 3D?
The simulator.
Yeah, he did not enjoy that one.
No?
So there were some tears shed after that one. But
can he go on any of the coasters yet or not really?
No.
Did you go on the Hulk?
We've been on that one before.
Yeah, that's a good ride.
We're Hulk fans. But that's fun. He didn't really care for the Harry Potter world. I'm sorry. He wasn't into that. Didn't care.
Last time I've been to Universal, I never watched any of the Harry Potters. And going to Harry Potter world made me want to watch the movies just because the level of detail.
And it was beautiful how they set up, especially now because everything is decorated for the holidays. So there's snow everywhere and wreaths. And it was very beautiful. And they had a performance as soon as we were walking through it, which he liked and he loved watching. But then we were moved on to Cat in the Hat.
What about the Simpsons World?
Nope.
Area?
That's at regular Universal, Islands.
Okay.
Yeah, we just did Islands of Adventure.
Gotcha.
I do want to try. Have you heard of the Volcano Bay?
No. Yes.
Which we could have done then because it turned out to be like 82 degrees when we went Saturday. It was hot and beautiful, but Volcano Bay looks amazing. A water park right
there.
That's
the new on-site resort, too, mm-hmm. I think. They have at Volcano Bay.
Yeah. So I would definitely – my recommendation, like, you got kids. I mean, you could choose to go to Universal. Don't waste your time. Sorry, Hacker. Do not waste your time.
That's where me and Hacker have bonded.
Not for kids.
No, I would actually prefer if no kids went to Disney World.
Well, it would probably be a better place.
And there would be no age restrictions on all of their best stuff, like the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique.
It's bad.
So there's age restrictions as in you can be too old?
Yes.
You're only up until 12 years old are you allowed to dress like a princess and get your hair done.
Yeah. I didn't want to talk about you, LeVar, today.
I wasn't even going to mention his name.
LeVar.
Wasn't even going to mention it.
I turned off 2 minutes into his CNN interview from this morning.
I'm getting tired of him.
I could only last 2 minutes because he kept calling the host Chromo.
I read the headline on USA Today, and it said, LeVar Ball does not raise sons, he exploits them. And I said, I'm not even going to click, I don't need to read it anymore. That's 100% how I feel,
yep.
And I'm going to agree with the media outlets that say we're not going to talk about him, nor have him on.
I'm just
and
exhausted talking just, about him.
Yeah,
I don't think he's a bad dad, right? I just don't care about him anymore.
Boo, not a fan.
All right, remember, next week we will be at the Dreamfinders Home Stadium, home 2.0. If you want to join us, head to 1010XL.com.
Woo-hoo.
Thanks to Tyler Devitt, as always, our producer. Stay tuned for Hacker After Dark with Andrew Gibson. That's next until midnight. For Blythe Brumleave, Donna Murphy, I'm Lauren Brooks. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday night. And
Dilly
enjoy
Dilly.
Jaguar Seahawks on Sunday at 4:25.
Dilly dilly!
Dilly dilly!